I was in this really busy coffee shop the other day, and I overheard this amazing little exchange. It was between a guitar instructor and a student. The student was getting super frustrated, trying to tune a string by ear, you know, even though the little digital tuner was sitting right there.
Right, trying to skip the hard part.
Totally. And the instructor, he doesn't even look up. He just says, "You have to stop looking at the tuner. You have to feel the tension in the string. Your fingers will know it's right before your eyes do."
I love that.
And the student goes, "But can't you just describe what that feels like? Give me the checklist." And the instructor just laughed and said, "That's why you have to do it wrong 100 times first. I can describe it perfectly, and you still won't know until your body knows."
Until your body knows, that's the
Yeah,
whole thing right there.
exactly. And that's not just about music. It's,
Okay.
I mean, it's cooking, it's surgery, it's even coding. It's any skill that really lives in your body, not just in your mind. So that's our mission for this deep dive. We're going to try and define that kind of knowledge. We've got sources from cognitive science, ancient philosophy, even robotics, to figure out how humans actually learn.
And crucially, why that's so different from how an AI learns,
Yeah.
which is all about data and pattern matching.
Right. We're going to look at embodied knowledge, why you can't just stream it through a screen, and what we might be losing as all our learning moves online. Okay, so let's unpack this. To even start, we need a framework. And the core philosophical idea comes from a guy named Gilbert Ryle.
Wow, yeah. He made this really crucial distinction.
He did. He talked about two fundamentally different ways of knowing. The first is what he called knowledge that.
Knowledge that, so facts.
Exactly, facts, propositional knowledge, things like Paris is the capital of France, or F equals ma, you can write it down, you can test it, you can transfer it in a lecture, it's information.
And then there's the other kind, the much more elusive type, knowledge how.
Yes, knowledge how.
And that's procedural. It's a skill. It's knowing how to ride a bike or how to comfort a crying child. You can have all the theory in the world, all the knowledge that
But if you can't actually do the thing, you don't have the skill.
you don't have the knowledge.
Cognitive scientists like Dr. Hubert Chen, they always come back to the classic bicycle example for this.
It's the perfect example.
You can read a physics textbook about balance and momentum. You can watch a perfect slow motion video explaining everything. You can have 100% perfect testable knowledge
But
that.
until you physically get on that bike and fall down, until your body struggles with it,
Right.
you just don't possess the knowledge how. The instruction isn't enough.
So why not? What's actually happening in the body that a textbook can't reach?
Well, bike riding is a complex sensorimotor skill.
Mm-hmm.
It relies on systems that literally don't speak English. I mean, your vestibular system, that's your inner ear, your gyroscope,
No.
your motor cortex, your cerebellum. They can't learn from a description. They have to learn from practice. They need thousands of little trials of errors to build a predictive model of what happens when you move a certain way.
And we tend to think of skills like coding as purely intellectual, but this applies there too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Reading a book on Python gives you knowledge dash that. It's the map. But real expertise is built through the struggle, the debugging, staring at a broken screen for hours until finally it
Yeah.
works. The knowledge gets built into your nervous system through the doing.
The doing.
And that doing, that struggle, it's completely non-negotiable. Because acquiring a skill can't be rushed. It's not just an idea, it's biology. It takes time.
What do you mean by that? Like, what's happening biologically?
So if you look at motor learning, a skill moves through stages. It starts in the cognitive stage. That's where you're thinking about every single step. It's clumsy, high error rate,
Very conscious.
very conscious. Then, with practice, you move to the associative stage.
Okay, and what's the shift there?
That's when your brain starts to chunk behaviors together. It automates little sequences. So instead of move foot, turn wrist, press, it just becomes one smooth movement.
I see.
And that's the physical transformation that lets you get to the final stage. The
Ooh.
autonomous stage, that's when it's fluid, it's automatic. You can ride the bike and have a conversation. Your conscious mind is free.
So the body is literally rewiring itself to be more efficient.
Precisely. And
Wow.
this is where the biological bottleneck is just, it's absolute. We're talking about a process called myelination.
Myelination. Okay, break that down for us.
So you have neurons in your brain, right? The wiring. And glial cells literally wrap those wires, the axons, in a fatty sheath called myelin.
Like insulating an electrical wire.
That's the perfect analogy. It's
Cool.
insulation. And that insulation can make the signal travel. I mean, we're talking 100 times faster. That's how a practice skill becomes so fast and automatic.
Wow. And that takes how
Sure.
long?
Well, the science suggests it takes 3 to 12 weeks of consistent practice for that process to really take hold for a new skill. You can't speed it up.
So what does that mean for, you know, all those two-week mastery boot camps?
It means they're great at delivering knowledge, that they give you the concepts, but they cannot biologically deliver the skill. You might leave knowing what to do, but your body hasn't had the time to build the myelinated pathways to do it competently. You have to respect the speed of myelin.
And you also need the right kind of input to even start that process. You need to know if you're doing it right or wrong instantly.
Exactly. This is what's called the closed-loop feedback problem. You need a real-time cycle. You take an action that leads to a sensation, a sound, a feeling. Compare that to your goal. You make an adjustment, and then you repeat.
This is why you can't really learn to drive a stick shift in a video game.
Spot on. Because the simulation can't give you the physical kick of the clutch catching or the actual sound of the engine grinding. That verbal instruction, that screen, It just bypasses the essential sensorimotor loop your nervous system needs.
Okay, so if so much of this is nonverbal, physical, intuitive, how do we even talk about it? That brings us to tacit knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. This is the idea from Michael Polanyi, who famously said, "We know more than we can tell." It's the surgeon who just feels that something is wrong with the tissue, or the mechanic who knows the problem from the pitch of the engine rattle.
Yeah, that intuition.
So if you can't write this knowledge down, how on earth is it transmitted?
Well, historically, the only way was apprenticeship. You learn by being there, watching, imitating, getting corrected in real time by a master.
Like the story of Marcus Ozé, the master carpenter.
Exactly. He says modern apprentices struggle because they just watch polished YouTube videos. When he teaches, he corrects them based on things that are invisible on screen. He listens for the sound of the chisel cutting the wood versus tearing it. He can even smell if the wood is burning slightly from too much friction.
Smell and sound. It's amazing how much we assume learning is purely visual.
He says he can't teach the skill directly. He can only create the conditions where you can learn it. He puts them in that closed-loop feedback environment.
And his apprentice, Jordan, said it perfectly. After an hour of struggling, he said his mind was totally confused, but his hands were starting to know.
The body is solving the problem. We see the same thing with Carmen, the barista we profiled. She figures about 80% of her skill is tacit. She knows the milk is steamed perfectly from a very specific sound, a soft hiss, not too high-pitched.
A sound that a beginner just wouldn't be able to distinguish.
No, not at all. She said it took her maybe 6 months of making coffee every single day to consistently hear that exact sound and react to it automatically. That knowledge is in her ears and her hands, not in a training manual.
All right, here's where it gets really interesting for me. If proximity and direct sensation and this feedback loop are so essential, what happens when we move all our learning onto Zoom?
Yeah, the great pandemic experiment.
Right. And Dr. Chen, he summarized it perfectly. He said platforms like Zoom are great for knowledge, that for lectures, for information transfer.
But they are terrible for knowledge. How?
Why? What is actually being lost?
Because the digital medium just systematically strips out all the crucial sensory channels.
Okay, like what?
You lose spatial information, peripheral vision. You lose micro expressions because of video compression. You even lose things like prosody in the audio.
Prosody? Can you define that?
It's the rhythm, the tone, the pitch of someone's voice. It's the music behind the words that tells you how they mean something.
Yeah.
Digital audio flattens all of that nuance.
And most importantly, you lose the feeling of shared physical space.
Which is absolutely critical. Because when two people are together, a master and an apprentice, their nervous systems actually co-regulate. Breathing can synchronize. Mirror neurons fire when they watch each other. It's this unconscious, embodied information transfer.
And a screen just blocks all of that.
It's a wall. It blocks it completely.
And we saw this fail over and over. There was the yoga student who couldn't feel engage your core until the teacher was there in person to physically touch her abdomen.
Or the cooking student whose instructor couldn't smell or feel the dough through the screen to know if it was kneaded enough. The teacher lost their senses.
My friend's daughter was learning cello online. The lag made it impossible to play together, but worse, the teacher couldn't see the tiny, incorrect angle of her wrist. She practiced it wrong for 6 months, basically building bad myelin that had to be undone.
The common thread is the absence of that sensory feedback loop for both the teacher and the learner. It breaks the whole system.
And this idea, this need for direct sensory input, it's not new, is it?
Not at all. It's thousands of years old. What's fascinating here is you can go back to ancient Indian philosophy, the Naya school, and they had a concept for this. pratyaksha pramana.
Okay, that's a mouthful.
It is, but it's simple. Pramana just means a valid means of knowledge, and pratyaksha means direct perception. Knowledge you get directly through your senses, seeing, hearing, touching, and so on.
So direct experience is the foundation of all other knowledge.
Exactly. For them, pratyaksha is foundational. The other forms of knowledge, like anumana, which is inference, and shabda, which is testimony from a reliable source, they all depend on it. You can only infer fire from smoke if you have first directly perceived the connection between the two.
And that connects directly to our modern problem. We are drowning in shabda, in testimony. We're reading about things, watching videos, getting AI explanations.
Without the necessary pratyaksha foundation.
Yeah.
Without the direct experience, we're learning about things, not learning through them.
The example of pain is so powerful. You can read every neuroscience textbook on pain. You have perfect shabda knowledge. But until you've experienced real, intense pain yourself, pratyaksha, that knowledge is just abstract. It's disconnected from reality.
Totally. And that makes it really easy to misapply when you're trying to help someone who is actually suffering.
So if screens are stripping out this essential pratyaksha, where does this kind of learning still happen?
It happens in physical spaces, like that coffee bar you were in, or workshops, or labs. Not because they're designed for teaching, but just because people are physically present together.
And that enables, what, two key things?
I think so. First is observation of process.
Yeah.
You see the barista make a mistake and fix it. You see the coder struggle and then have a breakthrough. You see the messy, real-time process, not the polished five-minute tutorial where all the errors are edited out.
You see the failure that leads to success.
That's it.
Yeah.
And second, you get multi-directional exchange. Knowledge moves sideways from peer to peer, not just top-down from teacher to student. You overhear a solution. You ask a casual question. That physical proximity creates these accidental learning opportunities.
And bringing this all back to AI, this seems to be its fundamental limit, this whole idea of embodiment.
It is. In robotics, they have this constant problem called the sim-to-real gap. And AI can learn perfectly in a simulation, but when you put that same AI into a real robot in the real world, it fails.
Why?
Because the simulation is always an approximation. It misses the tiny real-world details, the exact friction of a surface, the noise in a sensor. The AI never experienced the true physical consequence of its actions.
And large language models have no embodiment at all.
None. They have no proprioception, no sense of a body in space, no interoception, no inner feelings like hunger or pain. They can describe riding a bike based on billions of texts written by humans who have. They cannot have that knowledge.
They can mimic expertise, but the mimicry isn't the real thing.
Absolutely. The value of human expertise is that our knowledge is structured by having a body and living with the consequences of our actions. We are forced to solve that closed-loop feedback problem. AI isn't. And that's the knowledge you just can't download.
So what does this all mean? It feels like we're at risk of developing incredible knowledge that facts, theories, just endless information, but with almost no knowledge how. We're losing the capacity to pick up that tacit knowledge that only comes from being there, from doing, from making mistakes. The master carpenter, Marcus Ose, he said it perfectly. He said, you can't download competence. You can't stream mastery. You have to build it in your body one mistake at a time over years.
Yeah.
And yet all the economic incentives today push for learning that's scalable, standardized, and above all, fast. But if real deep learning happens at the speed of myelin, a biological process, not the speed of a download, we have to ask a pretty tough question.
What's that?
Is our obsession with speed actually destroying our capacity for real mastery? Maybe for the things that truly matter, learning is just supposed to be slow.